It is a pleasure to introduce our next instructor based in New York. Christopher Meraz serves as a director and analyst at AFAM Group, which consults a select number of top-tier institutions on their investment portfolios with a focus on alternative investments. AFAM Group's value-added consulting approach includes education on alternative investments to employees and decision makers of the client organization. On behalf of the MOI Global membership community, a very warm welcome to you, Christopher. Very much looking forward to your presentation. Please go ahead.
Hi, John. Thanks. It's an honor to speak to everyone today. Today I'll be presenting Canada Goose. The goose is loose. Here's a legal disclaimer real quick, just get this out of the way. This is just for informational purposes only, should not be relied upon as any solicitation or recommendation. So I'll start real quick. I have quite a few slides to get through, but this is a quick overview for those of you who are not familiar with the brand. Canada Goose really started 60 years ago. It was founded by Sam Tick, who was a Jewish Polish immigrant. And then he founded the company based on really manufacturing snowmobile suits and heavy coats in the Canadian weather. And then eventually his son-in-law took over, David Reese. And when David took over, he really was sort of a manufacturing expert and invented a new process of filling down jackets with this new innovation, which sort of enabled them to scale the business over time. And then in the 80s, they have a few achievements with the parkas. I think most people are familiar with the signature parka from Canada Goose. And then in the 2000s, Danny Reese, who is the grandson of Sam Tick, took over. The son of David. And when Danny took over, that's when the business really transformed from what I would say a regional to local brand to sort of a global brand in the making. So here's a little bit of a timeline and kind of just kind of shows you kind of what the brand has done recently. 2011, they started to introduce kind of extensions outside the parka product line, kind of getting into, you know, lightwear apparel, hybrid jackets, raincoats, things of this sort. And really in 2014, began sort of a transformation of the business from a wholesale sort of business to a direct-to-consumer business. And this is really the big bull thesis here, is that there's about a 30 percentage point difference between wholesale margins, gross margins, and direct-to-consumer margins. So this is really a big piece of the business, and that was just really started in 2014 from essentially nothing. So in 2016, this business opened two flagship locations. 2017, they further extended the brand into knitwear, outerwear. And 2019, they made some manufacturing expansions. Okay, moving on. So I'm not sure how many of you have been to the actual stores, but I'll say it's quite an experience if you've been to a few of these locations. It's, you know, much different than a normal retail experience. So on the left here is a cold room where you can actually test the jacket in a negative 12 Fahrenheit room. And then on the right is sort of how, you know, some of these jackets are presented, more of like a fine art sort of, you know, appreciation for the jackets. And then moving forward, we have another, this is in Toronto. This is a recent opening. And this is actually kind of an innovative store, because this is a store that is really entirely experience-based. So you can't buy any jackets or any clothes at this location. So this has a room with you know, snow effects, has a cold room, has a crevasse that actually there's an LCD screen on the floor that cracks as you walk through it. And really what this is, kind of the genius behind this is, this is to sell customers through their online e-commerce channel. So as you walk through the store, you can, you know, test the jacket, see how it works, and then you can place your order on the e-commerce site. And typically the jackets will arrive in 2 to 4 hours at your home. So this is a store that has really no inventory besides the test jackets. So this is sort of a new innovative approach, something I think is quite unique and you know, could be quite helpful long term. So when I first started looking at this company, I think my view was that this was probably a short. Given that view, I think I had a feeling that this was really a saturated brand, probably experiencing some brand fatigue, especially in Canada and Northeast North America. I think you, in New York City here, you see these jackets everywhere. So you kind of feel that this is a saturated and penetrated product. However, if you look abroad, I would say this brand is really just getting going abroad, especially in Europe, Asia Pac, especially China. I think the China market could be quite large for Canada Goose. This maybe a lot of people think this is a parka retailer that has traditional exposure to department stores and mall-based traffic and kind of the typical retail issues that we've seen over the last 5 years. The high multiple reflects this growth and then some, perhaps, is the image. I think with the recent IPOs, you've seen a lot of froth in the space. So I think this, could be labeled as a recent IPO that maybe bucketed in that group. I think some of the China geopolitical concerns have certainly impacted Canada Goose recently, but I think those are temporary short-term concerns. Nonetheless, the 27.4% short interest. So there are quite a few folks that are really, quite adamant that this is a short. So this is a variant view. This is how I see it. Canada Goose is really an innovator. They're vertically integrated with significant pricing power. They've done small price increases and been able to kind of push that through the channel without any real disruption. And really the transition from from wholesale to direct to consumer has really expanded margins. Margins have gone up about 2,200 basis points in 5 years. Based on the math, where you think direct to consumer as a percentage of this business ends up, you probably have another 10 or so percent expansion on gross margins. The potential is there, at least. So moving forward, I think the growth profile also is quite conservative from management. I would say almost overly conservative, and I have a few slides later discussing this. But management has basically said this business should grow 20% top line for 4 to 5 years out. I think that's highly conservative, and I'll show you why in a few slides. But this is a brand that is extending the product, expanding the product globally. So they have a lot of levers they're pulling to grow this business. And Canada Goose is really one of the few global luxury brands that sort of has this open white space. It's a sub $1 billion revenue global brand. I think over the past 5 years, I think a lot of people have underestimated the growth potential of this business. Okay, so why is there an opportunity? Why now? The China boycott, I don't know if people are familiar with the Huawei CEO who was arrested in Canada. That kind of started a quasi boycott of Canada Goose products. And that sort of led to some re-rating of the stock. So it had extended valuation. It was trading at 12 times EV to sales. almost 70 times EV to EBITDA. And then, you know, more recently, you've had issues in Hong Kong, which have affected two of their flagship locations. Only having 20 global flagship locations, that's a pretty meaningful impact. So the stock is about 45% off its 2018 peak. And then this is just kind of some simple multiples, kind of where Canada Goose is traded. This is the cheapest, really on an EV to sales basis and a EV to EBITDA basis it's been since it's been public. And, you know, essentially this stock since it's gone public has sales have increased about fourfold. So this is, you know, quite a high growth business. Okay, so large early investments in manufacturing distribution. So they've just completed four manufacturing facilities in Canada. For those of you who aren't aware, these jackets, all down jackets, are manufactured in Canada. All apparel knitwear is manufactured in Italy. So this kind of resonates, I think, with customers as far as the you know, tradition and kind of the established heritage of the brand. Recently, this is kind of another bull thesis emerging, at least. They acquired Baffin, which is a high-end shoe manufacturer, really sort of a boot and Arctic kind of boot manufacturer. And essentially, what I think the plan will be in the next couple of years is to extend their product line even further into a shoe category, probably boots, hiking boots, potentially leather boots as well, and shoes. So it's something that is in the works. However, I think the sell side is a little impatient with the management team and kind of the time they're taking to really make the product a high quality product and make sure it's done right. Given all these kind of investments, you know, capital spending has been extremely high, probably quite, you know, almost double the peer group. And that's sort of normalizing recently and should be about 7.5% of sales going into 2020. Okay, so really, the demand for the product is so high that what management is doing now on the wholesale level is they're really prioritizing direct to consumer. So direct to consumer comprises the flagship stores as well as the e-commerce business, and then wholesale is, you know, the department stores and other high street locations. And so management has recently had a midterm target of really throttling the wholesale distribution to really a high single digits growth rate, while direct to consumer, you know, has been growing about last 12 months, about 70% year over year. These are just a few quotes that Danny Reese kind of gives you an idea of the way he thinks about the business. And so he kind of talks about they're not afraid to be sold out of product. You know, typical Danny that he thinks if people can't find the product, if they're out of it, they'll come back next year. He doesn't treat these jackets as commodities. You know, he thinks it's an investment for customers. And as I mentioned before, really Canada Goose has an allocation model. So wholesalers will pre-order. Now what wholesalers are doing is really ordering in the summer, which is kind of unprecedented, but they're ordering the jackets in the summer so they can get a idea of what their inventory looks like early winter, and then do a reorder to essentially restock. However, Danny and Jonathan really prioritize their own stores over wholesale. So for instance, Nordstrom's may or may not get another allocation after their initial inventory distribution. So that gives you kind of an idea of how this business works, how it runs. Let me move forward. So 2019 is really kind of a key inflection period. This is just a quick table here of really wholesale, which is wholesale business has roughly 45% gross margins, and the direct-to-consumer business, which has right around 75% gross margins. So you have a 30% delta there. And as you can see from 2018 to 2019, the direct-to-consumer grew about 70%. So, you know, this is sort of, you know, really has driven a margin expansion. Operating margins are in the mid-20s, and gross margin profile has gone from, you know, the high 30s, the low 40s to 62% over a five-year period, which is quite remarkable in retail. You don't see this that often. Moving forward. So I'll talk a little bit about the white space. And, you know, so this is a, you know, obviously a 60-year-old family-run business. And I believe really it's in its early infancy. So to give you an example of how underpenetrated the global market is, Canada Goose drives roughly 35% of its sales in Canada, whereas Canada represents only 2% of the global luxury market. So you can kind of extrapolate that however you want, but I think, you know, it's pretty clear that it's vastly underpenetrated abroad, especially Europe and Asia Pac. So, you know, 20 global flagship brick and mortar stores. Their closest competitor, Montclair, has roughly 205, I think, is at the last quarter. So you can kind of see, you know, the space that Canada Goose could expand to, and, you know, some of the top cities around the world would be easy expansion opportunities. So in the U.S., there's only 5 stores. Europe has 2 stores, 1 additional store in Paris. And then I think there's a kind of a misunderstanding of Canada Goose. I think, you know, a lot of people think this is only a extreme cold weather brand, whereas I think you're seeing a lot of these jackets in London, especially the light jackets when it's, you know, 40, 50 degrees out. So, you know, I think this is, you know, the brand will continue to expand, sort of similar to Lululemon, where, you know, it was traditionally a women's brand, then they expanded to men's, and then they expanded further to hoodies and jackets and shoes, socks, things of that nature. So, you know, I think as far as sales outside of North America, roughly 3/4 of the growth was outside of North America. So that kind of shows you where the trajectory of the business is. And then in the next 12 months, there's 5 international stores, with 3 being in China, 3 more being domestically in the North America market. Excuse me. China is really a key untapped growth market. As you can see below, Chinese represent 32% of luxury goods spending, and, you know, Americans and Europeans at 22 and 18%. So this kind of shows you really how underpenetrated Canada Goose is within China. Here is the most recent sales. This is on the most recent quarter, so this actually probably looks a little bit higher than it should for Canada Goose. But right as it stands last quarter, Canada Goose had 17% of their sales in Asia, whereas some of the large luxury brands drive, you know, upwards of 50% of their revenues from Asia, China. And this is a store in Beijing that opened kind of during the boycott fiasco, and kind of, you know, gives you an idea of maybe how this brand resonates with Chinese. So this was really right after the boycott. So this is the opening of this flagship store. And I think it was 9 o'clock in the morning. This place opened with an hour line to get in the store. And it, by after 4 hours of the store being open, they had sold out of everything in the men's line. So they had completely sold out product within 4 hours. And there were still lines, the photo on the right, there were still lines a month, months later on the weekends to get in the store. So this kind of shows you perhaps some pent up demand. Okay, so this is the long-term forecast from management, which I think is highly conservative. Management has a history of beating almost every quarter. And I think Danny Reese and the team, they pride themselves on being conservative and realistic. However, I think it's almost almost ludicrous as far as the amount of conservatism in the business. So this is the kind of guidance that they have is 20% top line with 25% EPS growth. So some fixed cost levers as well. These are some quotes from Paul Silverton, who was a GM and VP of global sales at Canada Goose. And he kind of basically, suggests that the forecasts are very conservative. And he thinks that there's almost limitless growth in the near term. And he sees that for 3 to 5 years, which I think sort of makes sense. Okay, so this is the forecast, and I'll go back, and then this is really what the business has done over the past 5 years. So revenue CAGR of 40%. So management is essentially saying this business is going to, decelerate to about 50% of what it's been doing. I just don't see it. I think if you look at the Canadian market alone, year over year, last year, the most saturated market for them grew 28%. So if you put that in context of the global picture where, majority of the upcoming growth is coming from, I think, these are highly conservative forecasts. Okay, so triangulating the growth trajectory. There's a 61% year over year inventory build, which I think implies significantly higher sales top line growth than 20%. And as I said before, even the most saturated market, Canada grew 28%. You can kind of see where the US growth rates are and the rest of the world, Europe and Asia. And coincidentally, the geographic diversification of the business is quite spread out among US, rest of the world, and Canada. Okay, moving on. So competition. So I think I get this question a lot with as far as competition and Montclair and how these businesses are different and why perhaps there's a multiple spread between these businesses. So Montclair is first of all a much larger business, almost three times the sales of Canada Goose. 205 direct to consumer stores versus 20. Montclair on average, I would say, is more of a fashion related product who also has a much higher, moderately higher selling price relative to Canada Goose products. Montclair also takes on more fashion risk. So Canada Goose doesn't really come out with a whole new line of clothing and jackets every year or every other year. Whereas Montclair almost always has a new line, which I think for viewers that are aware of Montclair, you've kind of seen kind of the transition of that brand and the looks of that brand over the years. So there is some fashion risk with Montclair, whereas I think Canada Goose is more of a functional luxury product. And so kind of the history of Canada Goose and what the jacket was utilized for kind of keeps that baseline fashion element of the parka kind of intact. And I think it's relevant throughout the years. It hasn't really changed to a great degree in the last couple decades. Also Montclair, this is another big difference between sort of the strategies of the management teams. Montclair has about only 10% of sales through their online channel versus what I estimate Canada Goose to be at around 20%. They don't break it out explicitly, but you can kind of back into it with a few calculations. Montclair really has more of a physical presence, obviously, and Canada Goose, as I said before, their strategy is really to drive traffic through their e-commerce platform because it's very high margin, rather than having 200 flagship stores. So that's really a strategy going forward for Canada Goose. And then finally, Montclair products are mostly manufactured in Eastern Europe, whereas Canada Goose jackets maintain their heritage of being manufactured in Canada and obviously, as I said before, knitwear in Italy. So Canada Goose versus Montclair, this is just a quick sort of breakdown between the businesses, and you can see where the gross margin profile has gone for Canada Goose. And then you can see where own retail percentage of stores versus wholesale for Montclair is quite high at 77%. Whereas Canada Goose is still really driving growth in the DTC segment. And so, 2014, direct to consumer didn't even exist for Canada Goose. Now it's 52% of the business. And I think, Canada Goose can probably get close to that 77% where Montclair is. And I think as far as EBIT margins, I think Canada Goose really can get quite close to that 29-30% EBIT margin profile that Montclair has. Okay, so this is just a relative valuation, kind of taking a bunch of global peers that I think are relevant to kind of how you want to look at Canada Goose. So as you can see, I think where another disconnect has kind of happened, where sales growth, this business is growing quite rapidly. It has, out of this cohort, has the highest EBITDA growth, the highest sales growth, and the second highest return on equity. And if you kind of comp it to Montclair, it's quite interesting because Canada Goose is growing about twice as fast as Montclair, yet has a very similar EV to sales and, kind of profile, a PE, or, you could comp it to EV to EBITDA ratio. So that's where I think, this is kind of interesting because you're getting quite a discount if you factor in how quickly the brand is growing. And I guess, if you also factor in the white space in front of Canada Goose. Okay, so this is just, again, showing kind of where some premier luxury brands have gone on a gross margin basis over time. And Canada Goose is really a standout, really a up-and-comer. This really, you don't typically see this 200 basis point gross margin expansion. So I think this has really put them on a global playing field as a global premier luxury brand. One other thing I think that is is a concern is there's a super majority voting structure. So Bain Capital, which is a 2014 investor, and Danny Reese have a 10-to-1 voting structure. So essentially these two parties control Canada Goose. And then you can see if Bain happened to do a divestiture, the scenario that would play out, Danny would still have control. Danny, as far as stock owner, as far as shares outstanding, Danny has roughly 18% of the shares outstanding. Excuse me. Okay, so real quick summary, 60-year-old business, fully aligned with shareholders, with Danny Reese, essentially the leading functional luxury outwear maker globally. I think it has a decade plus of 20% top-line growth as the brand continues to grow globally. And you can really look, I think you can get a good analog by looking at Lululemon and how that business really started since their IPO, and kind of get a feel for Canada Goose and where this brand may go. I hate those comparisons, but I think, you know, you look at these businesses and these are sort of up and comers with great brand power that have been able to extend their brands beyond their traditional markets or their traditional channels. And so, you know, when you take into account the discount versus peers, the underappreciated top line growth and really category leading return on equity, I think this is really an opportunity to get a discounted price on a very high quality global business. And I think, you know, finally, this is one of the few businesses that has these vastly underpenetrated markets where this could be a multi-bagger stock, you know, years out from now. So let me finish with the risk. So there are some risk, obviously. Nothing's a certain investment, obviously. But so PETA has kind of had some issues with the way Canada Goose sources its coyote fur. Traditionally, what Canada Goose was doing was paying trappers to source the fur. And as the brand has grown significantly, I think just the volume of furs they need for the jackets has increased. So they've opened up the sourcing a little bit, which has gotten some concern from PETA. Essentially, you know, this is a high-end luxury product. So if we happen to go into a recession, this is certainly a brand that could be affected. You know, I think a lot of consumers look at the jacket as an investment, so they could delay or halt their investment. And then, you know, I think with China and the geopolitical concerns, trade war, there are some concerns that, you know, there'll be issues, especially with Hong Kong, obviously affecting a lot of the physical store presence there. But obviously, you know, with manufacturing in Italy and Canada, there's really no risk of exporting product or product disruptions versus some other retailers that have Chinese exposure. And finally, you know, I think there's a lot of counterfeits of this brand, which can degrade and dilute the brand value over time. You know, you see it with Louis Vuitton and many other brands globally. So, and that'll be it. That's it. Be happy to take any questions.
Christopher, thank you so much for the presentation. Maybe we could start with capital allocation. Is there anything you might prioritize differently? What's the management focused on? And over the medium term, do you see a return of capital in the form of buybacks as an option to drive additional value?
Yeah, great question, John. Actually, you know, I was going to mention it in my notes. They recently enacted a small buyback of about 1.6 million shares. So I think that's a reasonable thing to do. However, I think given the return on equity and just the kind of underpenetration globally of the brand, I really think kind of expanding this brand and piling capital into expanding the footprint, distribution, manufacturing. You know, as far as the last 2.5 years, they've increased manufacturing almost 50%. And then, so I think, you know, even with these large CapEx investments, you've seen this company's free cash flow positive. So clearly there's a lot of torque there as far as when these kind of capital investments normalize. And then I think you'll probably see more on the buyback end once they kind of get this brand to a, you know, kind of a steady state normalized level. That's when I think you'll see more capital return. But I think as far as how Danny has run this business, I think he's run this business like an owner operator. and someone that really wants to protect the brand and not grow too quickly. Because I think we've all seen those brands as far as Under Armour, Michael Kors. I think, you know, if you get too far ahead of your skis, I think you can definitely dilute the brand value. So I think that is clearly, on his mind when he considers capital allocation.
What kind of growth rate do you think is sustainable and non-dilutive to the brand? You think what they're doing now, I think 30%+ growth is a good number, or is that perhaps even a little bit high to do over, you know, the next 5+ years?
Yeah, good question. I think the way I look at it, I think as they roll out internationally, you could probably see a 30% top line growth number for the next 2 to 3 years. But I think domestically within North America, you'll probably see a 20 to maybe a high teen rate, especially as they bring down wholesale growth, right? So what they've been doing is kind of pruning some of the locations where they're showing product. As Danny kind of prunes and really they don't want to put any of the product in down channels. So this is really, really only the high end stores. With that kind of look, I would say you could probably have a total growth profile around in the 30s, which would be higher internationally and lower domestically in North America.
In light of the fact that Danny does have voting control, or together with the strategic has voting control, do we know much about his treatment of minority shareholders and whether that might become an issue at some point?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, I haven't had a chance to speak with him. I've spoken with investor relations, but, I think that is a concern, obviously. So far, though, I think he's done everything right. I also think that this is a business that's probably been approached by, high-end luxury conglomerates looking to buy him out. Perhaps many of you have seen, Moncler was approached by Kering for a potential buyout. So I think Danny has 18% of the stock. He's going to do what's right for himself and his family. I think that's fairly aligned with shareholders. The one thing I think that is always a concern, Bain Capital is in there. Really, their vintage on this investment is about 5 years. So if you think this is perhaps a 10-year vintage pruning process for them, they may make an exit in 5 to 6 years. So that could be certainly a concern. So that's something to take into consideration as well. But, so far from Danny, I've gone over, essentially every conference call, and I think he speaks like an owner-operator, and I think he's running the business really like he should long-term. He really doesn't care too much about the short-term and the short-term gyrations.
What data points are you tracking to either validate or challenge your thesis over time?
Sure. I think one of the KPIs that is really important for me is the direct to consumer growth and if they're able to really drive that channel growth, especially in e-commerce, because I think that is a really important channel for being sort of an asset light global fashion brand. If you consider if DTC starts slowing, I think that would certainly be a concern. However, this is also a business that, is very cyclical seasonal as far as, has wild gyrations throughout the year. So, and I think that also kind of, you know, plays into effect with how investors view the business. But, you know, as far as top line growth would be one of the, you know, key performance indicators I would look at. And then just where direct to consumer eventually normalizes. So I think you could get to that 70-75% level just below Montclair. And so I think at that level, then you're going to kind of see a normalized margin profile. So I think I would be concerned if they had trouble growing direct to consumer, because that's really been a backbone of the company recently.
Wonderful. Well, Christopher, I think I'll leave it there. I would just encourage our members to feel free to follow up with you either directly or to contact us, and we'll be happy to facilitate an introduction. Thank you once again for taking the time to be here and share this investment idea with our members.
Great. Thank you, John. Appreciate the time.
Thanks. Goodbye for now.